Thrillery Queens Mystery Magazine's fiction podcast. I'm Janet Hutchings, EQMM's editor. Our selection this month is by an author who made her fiction debut in our Department of First Stories in November-December 2020 with the story The Winner. Her second published story, which appeared in our sister publication, Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine, was reprinted in Best American Mystery and Suspense Stories 2022. This latest story by the Maryland author appeared in EQMM's November-December 2022 issue. Here is Latoya Giovina reading her story, What Kind of Criminal?
People often described handcuffs as cold. In truth, they only started out that way. Eventually, they warmed to the temperature of your wrists, but that didn't mean they were comfortable. I preferred the satiny lining of my white faux fur coat and the colorful walls of my new apartment. Instead, I was in a bland room and forced to keep company with a detective that matched. Bald, medium brown, medium height, medium build. Gray walls, blue industrial carpet. I didn't defraud anyone. They got paintings, I got money. Things are bought and sold like that every day. You're right. His gaze lingered on my accessories. Fakes and knockoffs are sold every day. The difference is the people buying them and the people selling them both know they're fake. They also both know they're committing a crime. I looked at my Prada sunglasses and my fuchsia Birkin bag. Could they be fake? I'd gotten them through a stylist contact of someone at the auction house. They had worked with the stylist, but they had also worked with me. I pushed the detective's insinuation out of my mind. If they were knockoffs, they were indistinguishable from the real thing. It began as a mistake, I said finally. I really hadn't done anything wrong. I just had to explain that to him. The detective smirked. So you accidentally sold 7 fake paintings for more than $20 million? Well, when he said it that way, it did indeed sound ridiculous. But that didn't mean it wasn't true. February 2020. I was wearing a pressed white shirt, black slacks, an apron, and ballet flat Crocs. L'Ambassadrice was opening in an hour. The scent of baking bread was so strong I could almost taste it. Almost. My stomach grumbled. I ignored it, tied my curly hair back with an amber-colored scarf, and started taking the chairs down off the tables they'd been stacked on the night before. "Hi, Tasha," said Alma. She was carrying a basket full of cloth napkins and silverware to put on my now chairless tabletops. "Hi, Alma." I reached for the napkins in her basket. "Did you get into anything fun on your day off?" "Shep had a work thing in New York. I tagged along, but I didn't see him much. I got a ton of great pics, though. My Instagram is going to look like a dream for at least 2 weeks." I smiled. There was no doubt in my mind that Alma was right. She was petite, with long wavy hair, and sort of exotic looking, but you couldn't quite place where. What was this fun-loving beauty doing with boring K Street Junior partner Shep? Tagging along on his trips and spending his money? "Have you heard about this COVID thing?" asked Alma. "They say it may be in the U.S. now." "I've heard about it, just like I heard all about Ebola in 2014. "Doors open in 15 minutes, shouted a manager. 30 minutes later, my favorite part of the week walked in. Her tall, thin frame was painted in Alexander Wang athleisure. She stepped lightly to her table in Christian Louboutin high tops. Money made people wonder who you were, so she hid hers where only people with money would see it. Shannon Ames, African-American painter of vibrantly colored portraits showing gray-skinned people doing everyday things. Her paintings were subtle, political, and inspiring. So was she. Subtly showing wealth, quietly meeting with lobbyists, casually exhibiting her life on Instagram. Fridays were her cheat day and the reason I worked at L'Ambassadrice. I knew from her feed she spent time there downing cheeseburger Americanes and champagne. When I got the job, I learned she finger painted on her iPad during La Binge. I always snuck a peek at what she was working on and went home energized to paint something that never sold on my website. Just being near her was enough. She practically radiated creativity. But of course, I wanted more. I wanted to become her peer. I wanted her to see my work. I wanted to meet her in the proper art setting and tell her how much her work meant to me, then have her ask why I looked so familiar. But before any of that could happen, everything changed. The bland detective looked at me sternly. "Were you finding it hard to stay away from Miss Ames?" I rolled my eyes. "I wasn't stalking her. I followed her on Instagram like millions of other people, and I waited on her when she came to the restaurant, which was my job. As a painter, I admired her talent. As a Black woman, I admired her hustle. That's it. Let's just get to the fake paintings." March 2020. COVID was all everyone was talking about, but outside of a few canceled reservations, my life marched on. Work, eat as much of the completely untouched throwaways as I could at work so I didn't have to buy food, put money away for next month's rent, buy art supplies, try to sell my art. Dow Jones dropped, COVID cases climbed, flights became dirt cheap. The cheap flights had the second biggest impact on my life. They weren't cheap enough for me to go anywhere, but I overheard Shannon Ames talking on the phone at the restaurant. First class tickets to Marrakesh were going for a song, and Shannon Ames was singing along. The next day, she posted a selfie by a pool. A week later, all non-essential businesses were closed, leaving me out of work. I stole a 5-pound bag of flour on the way out and applied for unemployment. "What are you going to do?" asked Alma. I was sitting in her beautifully messy apartment, full of furniture she'd gotten heavily discounted for the promise of promoting it on her Instagram. There were clothes strewn everywhere. Fashion Nova dresses, Pretty Little Thing activewear. The pair of giant Air Max 97s and Olympic gold in the corner had to belong to her K Street boyfriend. "Well, there's a moratorium on evictions, so I guess I won't waste my unemployment on rent," I said. "You already got your unemployment?" "Not quite. In fact, not only had I not received it, I had no idea when it would be coming. I called daily. The answer was always the same. We received your application, but due to a large influx of applicants, we don't know when we will get to you." I'd been eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches on freshly baked stolen flour baguettes for a week. But there was a more pressing issue. I was running out of paint. I had no way to buy more because my paintings weren't selling. "What are you going to do?" I asked. "My mom wants me to move to Manassas." Alma used her phone's camera to apply lip gloss with the precision of a surgeon. "It's so boring, though. Shep has been asking me to move in. I just don't know if we're that serious. Like, if I don't slow this down, we'll end up married. Maybe it won't be so bad. I can't make it on unemployment." Alma made kissy faces at her phone. Mommy and Manassas and marriage, oh my. I didn't have the love of people with money, but I did have talent. Lots of artists had dealt with poverty on their way to fame and fortune. Jean-Michel Basquiat, Amy Sherald, and my favorite customer, Shannon Ames, who'd been a waitress until she was 38. I just needed my talent to pay last month's electric bill. April 2020. "I just need help getting everything from my closet into these boxes Shep had sent over," said Alma. Her apartment was now devoid of furniture. She didn't need any of it at Shep's place. Apparently, she made a tiny profit unloading it all. "Our job opened for takeout. Are you going back?" asked Alma. "Not yet." "Then what will you do?" The answer was earn more at home on unemployment, eat from the food bank, and spend all my money on paint supplies. Weeks of painting all day, showering the paint off, sleeping, then waking up to do it all over again had changed me. I was getting better. I recognized immaturity in my previous works. I'd even sold a painting, a portrait of me as a child eating a peanut butter and jelly baguette. The buyer thought it was très chic. I let them think whatever they wanted, paid my electric bill, and bought a steak dinner. Très chic, indeed. I couldn't go back to carrying Negronis around, at least not yet, but that's not what I said. "Stay at home so I don't get sick," was what I said instead. It's not like we had health insurance. "You know that lady who used to sit in your section every Friday? She's stuck in Morocco. They closed the borders. Shep's firm is trying to get her home." I tried to act natural. I continued folding the clingy fabric dress in my hands and placed it gently in the box in front of me. My head was spinning, though. She's been crying about all the art supplies she can't get and how much she misses her home studio. I bet her studio is an influencer's dream. She lives in a row house on Corcoran. How do you know where she lives? I asked as nonchalantly as I possibly could. She got wasted at the Christmas party Shep's firm had. We had to drop her off. More questions were forming in my mind, but I let Alma talk. Maybe I should have listened to her more often. She practically gushed information. It explains a lot. Artists are crazy, right? When Shep offered to help her get in the door, she told us that she never carries keys. She opens her door with a magnet. I was pretty wasted too, so I didn't see it. I watched her climb the spiral staircase to her back door, and then she was gone. Alma started talking about Shep, their apartment, his Peloton, and maybe getting a dog. I left her apartment in a daze. I had missed so much. I had been so busy painting and promoting my own work that I hadn't logged into Instagram in nearly a month. Shannon Ames had posted almost daily, just as she always had. I saw the villa she was staying in. It came with a butler, and she joked about how grateful she was for him because she was terrible with keys. She enjoyed the private chef and getting massages by the pool. Then the tone shifted. She couldn't wait to create. She had so many ideas. She couldn't get home. She couldn't get supplies. She couldn't hug her mom. She couldn't kiss her nieces. She was sick of tangine and wanted a burger americaine. She posted a lot of pictures of wine. The next morning, I climbed a spiral staircase to her back door. There was nothing high-tech, just a tiny $5 box containing a key with a magnet that attached to the bottom of her top step. Calling her home beautiful was almost an understatement. The Kempton George was beautiful, but it was trendy and worked too hard to remind you that you were in Washington, D.C. Shannon Ames's house was like being transported into a painting. Her furniture was muted, mostly grays, some blacks and browns. There were heavy white ceramic vases on every table-like surface and intricate chandeliers hanging in almost every room. Then there were the walls. Every wall was painted a color straight out of a Shannon Ames portrait. Egyptian blue, saffron, emerald, and fuchsia. Her closet was stuffed to the gills with expensive shoes and clothing, all arranged by color. There was even a real safe for her jewelry. Finally, there was her studio. Pristine, not a drop of paint anywhere. Light flooded the room from all directions. There was a row of 4-foot-tall rolling tool chests completely lining one wall. Inside the tool chest, I found exactly what I'd come for. Seemingly endless tubes of Michael Harding paints. An incredible find, because their most expensive hues could go for $100 per 1.35 ounce tube. There were also stacks of Princeton paintbrushes still in their original packaging. I filled my backpack to the point I could barely carry it. My goal was to prolong the length of time I could stay home to paint. If I didn't need to buy art supplies, I could spend my money on utilities and toiletries, thus not needing to go back to work. I was on my way out. I swear I was. Then I thought about canvases. Not the small ones I could afford, but the giant ones Shannon Ames used. I found the canvases, but it was in their pursuit that I found what had the biggest impact on my life. Are you going to tell me the paintings aren't fakes, that you broke and entered, then stole them? Interrupted the detective. I didn't break in. I had a key. It was more like trespassing, I said. It's starting to sound a lot like grand larceny. You keep trying to reduce what happened to a single brushstroke, but it's not that simple. It's multicolored and complex. Has anyone even complained about the paintings? Shannon Ames's agent complained about his missing commissions. The auction house had told me all about Shannon Ames's agent. The convertible driving crybaby con man, he'd called them. Con man. He'd called them. His attorney had called them. There was even a court date scheduled, but there still wasn't a commission for Shannon Ames's agent. He didn't sell the paintings, I explained. The auction house only dealt with me. If he wants a commission for not doing anything, shouldn't he sue me? Shouldn't you have found a job to pay for your hobby? I shut my eyes and took a deep breath, calming myself. I couldn't believe what he had just said. Art is not a hobby. Art is who I am. Art is what I am. What you are is a criminal. So tell me the rest of the story so I can determine exactly what kind. The studio's closet was so stuffed with canvases, I had a hard time understanding how she got the door closed. I pulled out a few of them before realizing I had no way to get them home. I started going through the rest of the closets in her house. I was hoping to find a furniture dolly. What I found instead was a basket truck. Basically, a giant plastic box with wheels on the bottom. It wasn't empty, though. There were two paintings inside it. I have always felt a connection to Shannon Ames's work. Yes, she was a Black woman, like me. She was from D.C., like me. She had once been a waitress, like me. But to see her paintings in her home, where she had created them, was more intimate than sleeping in her bed. I knew what it was like to create something in private, to hide it away from prying eyes and to only show it when you were absolutely ready to share it with others. I stared at those paintings for what felt like hours. I'd never seen her work that close up before. In fact, most of her work I'd only seen on my phone. So being close enough to touch these paintings was like finding a key to Fort Knox, and touch them I did. I could feel the brush strokes under my fingertips. I'd seen her studio. I'd rummaged through her paints and brushes. When I closed my eyes, I could see her painting the portraits. It got dark out, which was a good time for me to head home. Fewer people would see me. But first, I wanted to take a picture of the paintings. Who knew if I would ever see them again? I took out my phone and saw I had an Instagram notification. Without thinking, I touched it. Tears began creeping out the corners of my eyes. She was dead. Shannon Ames had drowned in the pool of her villa. In a bout of denial, I turned one of her TVs to CNN. It was true. What happened next is a bit of a blur. I dabbed my eyes with my faux fur jacket sleeve. I woke up on the floor of the studio with five paintings. Paint was splattered everywhere, including on me. Dirty brushes had been discarded to the floor where the paint had dried and they had stuck. My phone had died. I had no idea how long I had been asleep, but the paintings were dry. I panicked, put all seven paintings in the box truck, covered them with a blanket, then pushed them home. I plugged my phone in and took a shower. Then all I could think about was how hungry I was. I had no idea how I had made it through the previous 4 days, but I was suddenly so weak I could barely see my phone to order a pizza. When it arrived, I ate it in its entirety on the floor, leaning against the front door of my apartment. May 2020. I named her Tulum. Alma was referring to the giant beige rat she was carrying in her Louis Vuitton tote. She's a chihuahua. Hi, Tulum, I greeted the dog. Do you want something to drink? I asked Alma. All I have is water. I have wine. Alma pulled a giant bottle of Malbec out of her tote. She reminded me of Mary Poppins. I wonder what else was in that bag as I retrieved two water glasses from my kitchen. What have you been up to? Asked Alma. Painting a bit. How about you? I've gained a ton of new followers. They love Tulum and seeing my Peloton workouts. Some of my followers are into art. Can I post some of your paintings? Her words hit me like a slap upside the head. Why hadn't I ever asked Alma to share my work? I knew she was an influencer. I'd love that, I answered. Alma posted one of the paintings from Shannon Ames's house. Then she tagged me. The next day, all of the art for sale on my website had been sold. I had thousands of new followers and at least 100 messages. One of those messages was from the auction house. And you sold them the paintings as if the real ones belonged to you and the ones you painted were created by Miss Ames? Asked the detective. Isn't possession 9/10 of the law? I possessed all the paintings. They were mine to sell. You're not the first criminal who thought they were the smartest guy in the room, the detective smirked. Did the auction house know that two of the paintings were stolen? They didn't ask. I didn't tell. I'm guessing that's the same approach you took with the fakes. What makes something fake? I looked at my bag and glasses. I used her brushes, her paints, her easels, her studio, and even her techniques. She could have painted the exact same thing. But she didn't, which is what makes them fake. Has anyone complained about the pieces, I asked, other than her agent whose only concern is that he didn't get a cut? Would he even be complaining if he had gotten paid? You stole two priceless paintings. I'm sure someone is complaining about that. Her estate got a healthy cut. If there were complaints, I would have heard about them. You broke into her house. Every item used to create the fakes was stolen. Paint, brushes, even the canvases themselves. The detective counted on his fingers as he rattled off the alleged stolen items. I looked down at the handcuffs on my wrists. They were annoying me now. The room was devoid of sunlight. In fact, the light was downright inhumane. I had two commissions to finish, and I wanted to get gas before it got dark. Plus, I had promised Alma I would do a dance with her for TikTok. I didn't have any more time to talk to the detective. Are there complaining witnesses about these supposed stolen supplies? Why don't you give me a list of exactly what you stole, said the detective, sliding a notepad and a nod-on pen across the table at me. Why don't you tell me exactly what I'm charged with, I said, sliding the notepad back. I didn't dare touch the pen. We were still in a pandemic, after all. The bland detective's eyes widened. He could stare all he wanted. I was done talking. Charge me or let me go, I said. Which of the paintings are the fakes, and which are the ones you stole? His voice was an octave deeper, as if he had been taught that deeper voices would be taken more seriously. He was still trying to intimidate me, but he had made a mistake, a big one. He hadn't known for sure some of the paintings were fake until I told him. All he seemed to know was that the agent didn't get his commission. I stood up. Charge me or let me go. You don't give orders. Sit back down. I'll tell you what you're charged with when you tell me which paintings are fake. I stood in place and held out my wrists. If I'm not under arrest, then handcuffs off. If I am under arrest, then I want my phone call. He stood up, just a little below my height in my Louboutins. Which paintings are fake? I looked down slightly and saw him clearly. Shannon Ames's agent had heard about the sale of the late artist's final works just like the rest of the world, on the internet. He had done everything he could to get himself paid. When that failed, he'd done everything he could to stop the sale of the paintings. He'd failed there too. If I had to guess, he'd then tried everything he could to pursue criminal charges. But there wasn't a crime exactly. The only other person who could say for sure which paintings were fake or stolen was dead. That was the case for countless paintings. Museums, galleries, and auction houses were flooded with fake or dubiously acquired works. It didn't matter if the works were real or not. It mattered what people believed, and they believed in my paintings. Honestly, knowing two of the works were stolen would actually increase their price. Nothing sells like a great story. Eventually, the agent found his way to this bland detective. A detective willing to waste time on his wild claims. A detective who came to me with no evidence, no video footage or fingerprints. He hadn't even Mirandized me. All he had was the story of one person against me, a person he thought he was smarter than. And now I knew that he knew nothing. I fought to hold in my smile, unsuccessfully. Which paintings are fake? The detective repeated. You're the detective. You tell me.
What Kind of Criminal is copyrighted by LaToya Jovina. Music for the podcast was obtained from purpleplanet.com. Mixing and editing for the podcast were done by Kevin Wheeler and Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.ellerycreenmysterymagazine.com.